Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
This is NPR News. I'm Angela Davis. Good to have you join us this morning. Let's go ahead and add sleep to the list of America's many disparities. Sleep is not equal for all. According to recent research from Stony Brook University and the RAND Corporation, Americans describe themselves as either excellent sleepers or poor sleepers, with very few okay sleepers in the middle. Why? Well, some of the reasons are obvious. Excellent sleepers tend to be older, live in cities, are highly educated, feel comfortable with the current administration, and are securely employed. Poor sleepers identify as living in rural areas, feeling underemployed, undereducated, and worried about the future. Sleeping poorly makes bad times worse. So, what can we do to get a better night's sleep? Dr. Michael Howell from the University of Minnesota is here to help. Good morning, doctor.
Thank you, Angela. It's great to be here.
Welcome back to the program. Dr. Howell is a neurologist who specializes in sleep disorders and sees patients at Fairview Riverside and Fairview Southdale. He is also program director of the Clinical Sleep Medicine Fellowship at Hennepin Healthcare and the University of Minnesota, as well as medical director of the Fairview Sleep Center in Edina. And I want to hear from you, too, our listeners this hour. How did you sleep last night? Has the pandemic changed your sleep patterns? Do you need some help getting a good night's rest? The phone lines are open, and here is the phone number. You can call us at 651-227-6000. Again, the number is 651-227-6000. You can also find me on Twitter. I'm at Angela Davis, NPR. Go ahead and tweet me. Dr. Howell, what have you seen the pandemic do to how people are sleeping? What are folks describing to you?
Well, it's gone through waves, right? So early on, there was quite a bit of anxiety that led to quite a bit of insomnia. Later, as people kind of slipped into a routine, many people, especially younger individuals, teenagers, probably ended up sleeping better because they were able to sleep in a little bit more for school.
Yes.
Before school would start virtually. And now the big problem is the challenges of adjusting to have to wake up early in the morning. This is certainly happening in my household with teenagers. Who have to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning to get ready to get on the bus at 7.
But certainly job loss and stress about, COVID-19, that seemed to play a role in how people were sleeping as well.
Oh, certainly. And then also for individuals who've had some weight gain, this can worsen obstructive sleep apnea, which is something you definitely want to have addressed.
So you and I in the past have talked about how we are all born with certain sleep tendencies. So let's talk about circadian rhythms and how they work.
Absolutely. So thank you for bringing that up. The foundation of good sleep health is your underlying body's 24-hour clock. We don't think about it very often. Most physicians are too busy doing other things to contemplate it and its effect on your mood, metabolism, endocrine system, and overall health. But everyone has a unique circadian rhythm. There are almost 8 billion people in this world, and there are 8 billion different circadian rhythms. It's a very important component of diversity. It directly affects how you fall asleep at night, how you wake up in the morning, and what your performance is during the day. So one simple way to start thinking about this is, when do you naturally become sleepy in the evening? And even for bad sleepers, even for people who struggle, there is some point. And actually, it may not be in the evening. It may be in the wee hours of the morning. It could be even earlier. There is some period of time when you have a tendency, the greatest tendency, to fall asleep. Ponder when that is, and then ponder, when is it that you would naturally wake up in the morning? I'm not saying that when you wake up and you feel fantastic, you may not be there yet, but when is the natural time that you fall asleep, and when is the time that you wake up? That is your starting point. You really need to understand where you begin before you're going to figure out, want to get to them.
Oh, Dr. Howell, you're breaking up a little bit there. Could you go ahead and repeat that? I'm sorry, we lost you there for a second.
Oh, I'm sorry about that, Angela.
Yeah.
Basically, you just want to know where your circadian rhythm begins. Mm-hmm. What is your natural starting point mm-hmm. in when you are naturally fall asleep and wake up? Because you need to know where your starting point is before you can figure out to move it to where you want to be.
Now, some people are just naturally night owls, right? And other people tend to be early risers. So can you train yourself to sleep on a certain schedule?
You can, but it does take intention. You need to figure out where you are starting from. So if you take someone who's a night owl, mm-hmm. who's someone who, if given the opportunity, maybe they'd fall asleep at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning and sleep until 10, but of course they can't do that.
That would be me. That would be me. And I cannot do that because of my job, right?
Well, I'll let me talk to the bosses at NPR, Angela, and see if we can't move your no, time slot to no, later.
It's fine. But like, that's a lot of people, like their work schedule demands them, or school schedule, to be alert and awake at times that may be in that may conflict with what their body wants to do.
That's exactly right. And we have established a fairly homogenous schedule for school and work that doesn't match up with a large number of people. And this has consequences. Mm-hmm. So if you happen to get the circadian lottery and you happen to just wake up naturally at 6 o'clock in the morning, that's a huge advantage to someone who mm-hmm. Did nothing wrong, but they just have a natural circadian rhythm delay. Mm-hmm. So what can you do about it? First thing to do is just start working on moving your circadian rhythm a little bit earlier by bright light exposure in the morning. Bright light is a sunrise. Mm-hmm. If we don't have a sunrise, a 10,000 lux light box to just kind of move your circadian rhythm a little bit earlier. The other thing you can do is you can start advancing your meal time. So if you normally have lunch at about 1, start having it at about 12:45, etc. And melatonin is useful here. Melatonin is not a sleeping pill. It is a circadian rhythm compound. It just signals to your brain that the sun has gone down. And you can take a small amount and it'll help pull that circadian rhythm earlier. If you don't have this problem, melatonin will not only not work, but it could actually make your sleep worse.
All right. As we talk about sleep and how to get better sleep, I want to take your phone calls. We have Dr. Michael Howell on the phone with us, and the number to call is 651-227-6000. We're already getting some questions in, so let's take a phone call from a listener in St. Paul. Aaliyah is on the line. Good morning to you, Aaliyah. What did you want to ask?
Hi, good morning. So I was actually, with the pandemic, I was pretty stressed and not sleeping well. So I started taking melatonin, and it's been, like a year now, and I'm trying to get myself to stop taking melatonin. But I've noticed that I'm not able to fall asleep very well, and my sleep quality has worsened. And so I was just wondering if there's any pointers or advice for how to get yourself off of melatonin.
All right. Thank you. That's Aaliyah, who is using melatonin but wants to do something else to fall asleep.
Thank you, Aaliyah. I really appreciate the call. So melatonin is a compound, as we just talked about before, for advancing circadian rhythm. If your circadian rhythm is naturally later, one question I would ask is, when do you naturally wake up in the morning? Do you wake up at exactly the time that you want to wake up and you're ready to go for the day? In which case, melatonin is really not the right strategy for you, and I would advise you just to go ahead and taper off by coming off a milligram a day until you're done with it. Or are you someone who, if given the opportunity, would sleep in later on weekends or on days you're not at school or working? In which case, melatonin is a very reasonable compound to keep taking at a low dose on a consistent basis.
And what are the consequences of poor sleep? How does it affect our health? Because that is really, why I want to talk about this, because it's so important.
Well, I really appreciate us spending the time on it. So sleep is a third of our lives. It's critically important for brain and body health. Poor sleep is more pervasive than COVID, mm-hmm. and it has consequences ranging from motor vehicle accidents to breast cancer. Sleep is when your brain clears out toxins that build up and can cause problems like Alzheimer's disease. Most notably, for most people, if you don't get a good night of sleep, you're just sleepy the next day. You're tired, you're dozing off, you have inattention, our judgment is not great, and we just feel sluggishly, and it affects our mood.
It also affects our mental health.
Oh, absolutely. Just a tremendous number of people I see who have anxiety and mood problems. And undoubtedly, sometimes those are completely independent of the sleep problems. But my default is always to consider the possibility that their mood and anxiety issue actually stems from a sleep problem. Mm-hmm. So if you fix the sleep issue, more often than not, the anxiety and depression get substantially better.
Let's take another phone call in Roseville. Pat is on the line. And Pat, what do you want to tell us about sleep?
I read a book that suggested you use medical tape to tape your mouth shut every night so you breathe through your nose. I started doing that. I sleep much better, and I wake up less during the evening.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've not heard of that. I mean, that's a new one.
I know. It's James Nestor, Breath, The New Science of Breathing.
All right. Have you heard of this? That's Pat in Roseville. Have you heard of this, Dr.
Yep.
Howe?
I know Dr. Nestor too. So there is a lot of evidence that we breathe much better if we breathe through our nose, mm-hmm. And by just closing the mouth and getting our nose to start working at breathing, the airflow is much smoother. And when you are breathing through your mouth, you are activating, not dramatically, but you're slowly activating stress hormones and adrenaline that can interfere with your ability to get a good restful sleep. This is
wow.
Nasal breathing through your nose is good for all sorts of things, including decreasing stress and as well as improved athletic performance. Now, for many people, though, Angela, they have trouble breathing through their nose. They have maybe a deviated septum. Maybe they had a broken nose. Maybe they have enlarged tissue inside of their nose. This is very, very common. And so anyone who just sitting there listening today would just close their mouth and just breathe through their nose naturally, try to breathe through their nose for about 2 minutes. It should come very easily. If it doesn't, it is worthwhile to have that evaluated, both for your sleep as well as just for how you're functioning during the day.
And since you mentioned getting evaluated, what do you want people to know about the sleep tests, the sleep studies that are available?
What a great question. Most people don't need a sleep test. Most people just need to talk to someone, whether or not it's a sleep doctor or a knowledgeable primary care provider or a nurse or a friend or a sleep coach, whoever that is, just someone to kind of spend a little bit of time understanding what your circadian rhythm is and what your sleep challenges are. Sleep studies are very useful primarily for two or three conditions, most notably sleep disorder breathing such as sleep apnea. In addition to that, conditions like dream enactment or REM sleep behavior disorder or narcolepsy.
Mm-hmm.
But most people, as we were talking about, most people have a circadian rhythm problem or insomnia. And by and large, the vast majority of people don't need a sleep study for those problems.
All right, let's take another phone call as we talk about how to get a good night's rest and the importance of that. I want to know, how did you sleep last night? And has the pandemic changed your sleep patterns? Do you need some help getting a good night's rest? Call us at 651-227-6000 as we talk to Dr. Michael Howell, who's a neurologist who specializes in sleep disorders and sees patients as well. In Bloomington, John is on the phone. Good morning, John.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, what do you want to share with us about sleeping?
Well, I'm a single man, 72. I'm retired 10 years. I put on an extra 100 pounds, and everybody tells me I should have sleep apnea because of my extra weight. When I sleep at night, I sleep very well. I dream every night. I remember my dreams in the morning. If I get up in the middle of the night, I go back to bed and I continue dreaming. I go to sleep in one position. I wake up in that position. I never toss and turn, and I sleep very well. The fact that I'm dreaming as much as I am, REM sleep, can you have sleep apnea as well?
All right. Well, I'm just curious, why are people telling you they think you have sleep apnea, John? How do they know?
My brother, who's not overweight, has sleep apnea. My sister, who is overweight, has sleep apnea.
Okay.
So they just figure I should have it.
Okay. Well, let's ask Dr. Howell. I mean, you're not able to examine John, but what do you think about what he's sharing?
Well, I really appreciate it. Thanks, John, for calling in. Sleep apnea can occur to anyone, as John has described. So sleep apnea can absolutely occur in someone who is of normal weight, and there are are people who are larger who do not have sleep apnea. Certainly, it's a risk factor, right? Mm-hmm. So the more weight we gain, the more at risk we are for obstructive sleep apnea. And just to review, so obstructive sleep apnea is the collapse of the upper airway during sleep. It is incredibly common, Angela. It is related to the fact that our airways evolved for us to talk. And because of that, our airways have a tendency to collapse. So obstructive sleep apnea is the price we pay as humans for being able to talk. And so if you gain weight, you're at increased risk. If you, as we get older, we're at increased risk for obstructive sleep apnea. The other aspect is alcohol. So alcohol notoriously worsens snoring as well as apnea.
All right, let's take another phone call from Minneapolis. We have Joshua on the line. And Joshua, what do you want to ask the doctor about sleep?
Yeah, actually, it sounds like you just started talking about the question I had. So my friend circle, and I'd say even family, maybe even a little more extended, seems like everybody is drinking a lot more alcohol. So I wanted to know more about how that inhibits sleep, and then you could kind of say, like, okay, is there other beverages that might help you sleep better? Beverages that, you know,
that's a great question.
Inhibit your sleep more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Joshua, we, you know, in this program, we've talked about how alcohol consumption increased during the pandemic, and you know, the belief that, you know, that is how many people are handling the stress that we've been living under. But Dr. Howell, what do we know about alcohol and sleep?
Oh, thank you. This is a great question. So alcohol is sedating for most people. So many individuals will self-medicate with alcohol to help fall asleep. The problem with doing that is that you increase your risk for obstructive sleep apnea. But in addition to that, more straightforward is alcohol is initially sedating for the first hour or two after you drink it. However, even in moderation, with just a drink or two, about 2 to 3 hours after you drink it, you are now withdrawing from alcohol. Even though you were not clearly intoxicated, your body is processing the alcohol, and now you are hypervigilant. The alcohol is now activating your brain.
The alcohol is having a party in your body, sounds like.
It is. It is. And so what many people will describe is, yep, I have a little alcohol before bedtime and I fall asleep right away. But then guess what? 2 to 3 hours later, I'm awake. I often have vivid dreams. Mm-hmm. I have difficulty falling back asleep. And so moderation, or just insight, I think, you know, I will socially drink alcohol from time to time, but I know if I do so, Angela, this means that my sleep tonight isn't going to be as good. And sometimes I take that information. I'm like, you know what? I guess I'll just pass and not drink tonight. And other times I'm like, you know, I'm with friends or neighbors and I'll just recognize that, you know, this might not be as great a night as it would be otherwise.
And Dr. Howe, part two of his question is like, what are some substitutes? Do you have suggestions? Mm-hmm. I would say hot tea. A lot of people, I mean, there are a lot of, mm-hmm. you know, caffeine-free hot teas that taste really good, are very comforting. That's mm-hmm. a good bedtime, you know, scenario.
Yeah, I think just finding the right ritual that works with you. So chamomile tea, dim lighting, hot baths. I mean, think of what we do with kids, Angela. So we brush their teeth. We, you know, wash and bathe. We get jammies on. We read a book. And more often than not, we can help our kids become really good, healthy sleepers. But for some reason, when we become adults, we throw all of that out the window.
Right.
And, you know, too many things get in the way. So just try to create a good, healthy routine for you. And yes, a little caffeine-free chamomile tea or sleepy time tea can really be part of a good, healthy routine.
All right. And I want to mention something on Twitter. Bill here is writing, Angela, my problem is I sleep soundly until 1 or 2 a.m. and then cannot get back to sleep for an hour or two. How common is it for people to have a dual sleep pattern? So not saying that Bill is drinking alcohol and that's what's waking him up.
No,
but
yeah.
There are a lot of people I know who wake up in the middle of the night and I think they attribute it to stress because their mind is going. They're thinking about the day to come.
two thoughts, one of which is, if Bill were chatting with me, the first thing I would ask him about is, what happens in the evening? So try to understand what time he's going to bed. And, you know, typical answer will be about 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, give or take. And what I would ask is, well, what's happening at 7, 8 o'clock in the evening? Are you dozy? Are you drowsy? If given the opportunity, do you fall asleep while reading to your kids or while watching a show or reading the newspaper? And if that's true, what have we just discovered, Angela? We've just discovered that Bill's circadian rhythm is earlier. His natural tendency is to fall asleep earlier and then to wake up earlier. Mm-hmm. And so how you address that is exactly the opposite of what we talked about before. You use light therapy, but you use it in the evening and you avoid melatonin. Melatonin is going to make Bill's problem worse, probably. Mm. And then the second thought I had is that, when you're not sleeping for whatever reason, this is very frustrating and it can provoke anxiety. Nobody ever laid awake in a dark room trying to fall asleep and thought about how great their life was. That's just never happened. And so I'm very sympathetic to how frustrating and anxiety provoking it is. But what I tell people is, like, look, you're going to have stress in your life. That's normal. And my job is to help you be able to sleep through it as best as possible.
Let's take another phone call. Again, we're talking about sleep and how to get better sleep. The number to call is 651-227-6000 as we talk to Dr. Michael Howell. In St. Paul, Beth is on the line. Beth, thank you for waiting. What do you want to ask or share with us?
Hi. So Hi. My sleep patterns have definitely changed with the pandemic. Historically, because of some sleep disorders, I had no trouble falling asleep. I was always tired, but I was a morning person. Mm-hmm. And since the pandemic, I've slowly started staying up later. I don't know if it's the revenge bedtime procrastination thing or what, but I'm staying up until like 11 or 12, mm-hmm. which I've never done in my life, even in college. My mealtimes are all over the place. The only thing I'm doing right is that I don't drink much alcohol and I don't have caffeine after about 10 a.m. because I know I'm sensitive to that. So I'm going to bed super late. My sleep is sort of fitful until 1 or 2 a.m. and then I'll sleep solidly for the rest of the night. But then I'm even more tired in the morning because I went to bed late, so I don't get out of bed on time, and it sets me up for a crappy day. And I just don't understand what's happening. Like, have I become a night person instead of a morning person? Is it a mood thing that's then suddenly staying up later? How do I think about shifting that back so I'm in a more functional sleep pattern?
Beth, I feel like you're speaking for millions of people right now. the sleep patterns changed during the pandemic. And, you know, folks who kind of, you know, had it down, she said she was an early riser and then she started staying up late. And, mm-hmm. you know, what's going on? And can she get it back?
Well, thank you, Beth. Circadian rhythms evolve. They do evolve over the course of a lifetime. They evolve as we go through various periods of stress in our lives. And in addition to your circadian rhythm moving around, and I'm just taking a guess here, what also can happen is your circadian rhythm can start to break down. We particularly see this as we get older, is that the robust nature of being wide awake during the day, maybe a tendency to nap in the afternoon, but then real sleepy at night and consolidated sleep until the morning, that breaks down normally as we get older. It's just blurred a little bit. We're awake a little bit more at night, and we're a little bit sleepier during the day. And modern life, bright light in the evening, the ability to doze off during the day, not getting robust sunlight, as well as another thing to talk about is temperature change. We're supposed to be exposed to our environment where the temperature goes up during the day and then it goes down in the evening. All of this can lead to a breakdown of an individual's circadian rhythm. Now, in addition to that, separate from that, there could actually be sleep disorders that come up. We can just develop insomnia separate from circadian rhythm problems that are it's worthwhile to try to address.
We are talking about sleep, and I want to hear from you, too. How did you sleep last night? Has the pandemic changed your sleep patterns? Do you need some help getting a good night's rest? The phone lines are open as we talk with a sleep expert. You can call us at 651-227-6000. You can also tweet me at Angela Davis, NPR. Now, back to the conversation about sleep with Dr. Michael Howell, a neurologist who specializes in sleep disorders. We're getting lots of phone calls about sleep and whether or not the pandemic has changed sleep patterns. Do you need some help getting a good night's rest? The phone lines are open. Call us at 651-227-6000. You can also tweet me at Angela Davis, NPR. I want to get to a couple of questions that a lot of people seem to have, Dr. Howell. This first one on Twitter, Steve is writing to me saying, Angela, what about people who just cannot do the CPAP thing? Have doctors tried sleeping with those things on their faces? What are our alternatives other than losing weight? My doctor just hounds me about it, and I'm trying, but I don't even want to go see her anymore and be scolded again. What do you want folks to know about CPAP, which is that machine that you can use to address sleep apnea, and if there are alternatives to that?
That experience is so common, and I appreciate just mentioning on how frustrating it can be when CPAP is not working for you. CPAP, to review, is a mask that goes over the nose, sometimes the mouth as well, but goes over the nose and just blows room air, no added oxygen, up through the nose and keeps the back of the throat open. This is a fantastic treatment for about 50% of people. They love it. You can't pry it out of their hands when they wake up in the morning after their sleep study. But of course, that means that 50% of people also struggle significantly with it. This may be because their sleep apnea just doesn't respond particularly well to CPAP. Some sleep apnea is called central sleep apnea, which doesn't respond to CPAP. Sometimes it's mild, and CPAP is just too much treatment for too small of a problem. Other times, other therapies that are useful that'll help keep the airway open are dental appliances. If you Google oral appliances for sleep apnea, you'll get about 500 different pictures, and they look like little athletic mouth guards that help keep the jaw forward. If you only have mild to moderate sleep apnea, if you still have all your teeth, this is often an excellent option. And there are good dentists here in the Twin Cities who can help set you up with an oral appliance for sleep apnea. There are surgical treatments for obstructive sleep apnea, but sometimes it's just sleeping on your side. Sometimes it's propping yourself in bed at night. I have a neighbor who swears to me on how much better he sleeps now that he got a bed, that he can adjust the head of the bed up to about 20, 25 degrees, and he feels so much more refreshed. And that's all it took for him.
And Dr. Howell, it's important to note, too, that for folks who have had success with the CPAP machine, that there's a huge recall right now by one of the manufacturers. And a lot of folks have been advised to no longer use them, and they are looking for alternatives until they can get a replacement. So that dental device, that implant, the thing you put in your mouth, I think that's seeing a lot of people are expressing a lot of interest in that right now.
Yeah, right. May I speak to that real quickly? Mm-hmm. This is the Philips Respironics devices. And if you have clinically significant sleep apnea and have been on CPAP for a while, you should stay on it. Even if you have a Respironics device, but talk to your sleep provider. They can get you a filter. The problem is the foam inside the machine has been breaking loose, and in a small number of people, they've been breathing it in. This is a very small number of people this has happened to, and sleep apnea is very important to be treated. So talk to your sleep doctors before stopping your CPAP machine.
And one other thing I want to address, sleep apps. So this is someone on Twitter called Finger Monkey wants to know, could you comment on the accuracy of sleep apps on smartwatches? How accurate are they? We know that there are many apps and devices and things mm-hmm. you can buy that are supposed to help you sleep. What's your experience been with those? What do you hear from patients?
Two thoughts. Most sleep apps and devices that we wear on our wrist measure the amount of sleep that we're getting both by movement as well as sometimes by heart rate and other measures that you can perceive through the skin. As a general rule, I'm thrilled with any technology that allows us to start thinking about and contemplating our sleep more. We run a sleep performance training program for athletes, and one of the first things we do is we just put a Fitbit on them, and we give them a feedback score every morning in terms of how much sleep that they're getting. And more often than not, they just start getting more sleep. In terms of its accuracy in defining what stage of sleep you're in, I'm less impressed with those, but they are quite good at identifying how much sleep you're getting at night. My second thought is that people need, as we talked about before, people don't need sleep studies as much as they need sleep insight. And so for a shameless plug here, I did build my own app with a colleague of mine, Dr. John Parker. It's called the SPI Sleep Journey app. And this is designed to help people understand their own circadian rhythms and find a motivation and treatment strategy to help improve their sleep.
And Dr. Howell, give me the name of that app again.
Oh, thank you. The SPI, as in Sleep Performance Institute, Sleep Journey.
All right. We have full phone lines right now. Let's take another call from a listener in Lilydale. Chris is on the phone. Chris, thanks for waiting. What did you want to ask?
Yes. Hi. I understand that there's a strong connection between body and mind when it comes to sleep. And I do as much sleep hygiene as I can. I've educated myself. I even try to do some meditation during the day. My problem is, how do I overcome when I wake up in the middle of the night? I fall asleep okay, but then in the middle of the night, I wake up as if I'm in a cold sweat and I've experienced some kind of trauma. And I know that there's a lot of anxiety and stress going on in my life, but the problem I'm experiencing is, how do I get rid of that, I believe it's cortisol, that kind of wells up in my body and makes it that much more difficult to get back to sleep?
All right. Thank you for your question, Chris. Dr. Howell?
Thanks, Chris. What you're experiencing in the middle of the night, many people experience. When we're in REM sleep, it is a very stressful stage of sleep, and if you wake up in it, your mind will be focused on threats, worries. You worry about your family members and relationships that you have, and so the strategy here is, how do we help you wake up naturally out of REM sleep and get out of it, so you're not lingering in there, as well as how do we help you get back to restful sleep. It comes down to the foundation to start with is, what is your natural circadian rhythm? So just like we were talking about before with Bill, what I would ask is, contemplate for a little while, take some time. What's going on in the evening? 6, 7, 8 o'clock at night. Are you sleepy at that time? And so the trick is if you are, you want to move that sleep until you want to move that sleepiness later by moving your circadian rhythm around with light. If that's not what's going on, then then cognitive behavioral therapy, which is often available online. And we have some strategies in our app that I mentioned before that can also be useful.
All right. Let's take another phone call from Eaton Prairie. We've got, is it Kara or Cara on the line?
Hi, yeah, it's Kara.
Hi, Kara. What did you want to share?
Hi. So, I haven't heard this brought up yet. What are your thoughts on sleeplessness and menopause? I'm going through menopause. I can't fall asleep. And when I do fall asleep, I wake up a lot in the middle of the night, and then I can't get back to sleep. And I'm very frustrated, needless to say. Causes me to sleep in, all the things that go on with bad sleep. So,
Kara, that is on my list of questions, too. I'm going through menopause also. So what can you tell us, women who are experiencing menopause and some disruption because of that, Dr. Howe?
Hi, Kara. Thank you so much for calling in. As with the loss of progesterone during menopause, this leads to sleep fragmentation. You didn't mention hot flashes, but certainly hot flashes interfere with your ability to get good restful sleep. The best principles are principles of cognitive behavioral therapy, which involve bedroom restrictions. So try to avoid being in the bed when you're not sleepy, which is definitely easier said than done, as well as getting out of bed in the middle of the night, which is, again, very challenging to do. What this looks like is that you'll end up sleeping less in the short term, but the sleep that you're getting is consolidated. And then you move from, 4 or 5 hours of sleep, and then you slowly grow it to 5.5 and 6 and then 7. But this is cognitive behavioral therapy. It does work quite well. It has been shown in women who are dealing with the sleep issues of menopause. And then in addition to that, it is during menopause when women are at highest risk for developing obstructive sleep apnea. Before Before that, they are at much lower risk than men, but then after menopause, they're at a very close risk to men in terms of sleep apnea.
And menopause goes on for years, Dr. Howell, so it is important to try to get a handle on what helps you sleep better.
Absolutely. And if you're really struggling, I mean, don't hesitate to reach out to either your primary care provider and talk about short-term hormone replacement therapy or, you know, just talk about coming to see a sleep specialist.
In Minnetonka, let's talk to Steve as we discuss sleep and how to sleep better. What's getting in the way of people sleeping? Steve, what do you want to share with us?
Yeah, thank you for your programming. I'm 73 years old, and this has been a lifelong problem. About not quite 20 years ago, I did have a sleep study because I was going through a period of severe fatigue. The sleep study showed nothing abnormal except that I did wake up 3 to 4 times during the night. Alcohol, caffeine is not an issue. I generally go to sleep 11:30, 12:30 at night. And I get up, I'll wake up maybe within an hour to 2 hours of falling asleep. And on an average, I can usually get back to sleep within 15 to 30 minutes. And then maybe 2-3 hours, I'll wake up again. And then the same thing will happen, mm-hmm. you know, maybe 2-4 hours. And that's on an average. On a bad night, I sometimes will wake up 3 to 4 times a night, and in the worst situation, I'll wake up like 3 in the morning, and I will be up until 7 a.m. Mm. I retired 3 years ago, you know, so I can stay in bed, you know, until whenever. When I was working, you know, I'd have to get up at 6-7 o'clock in the morning, and I'd still go through the same pattern of not being able to get a full night's sleep. The only exception is when I am absolutely exhausted, I may be able to get 6 hours in.
All right, Steve, let's have Dr. Howell respond to this. And I'm just curious, one of the questions I have is about aging. And men, I mean, Steve mentioned he's in his 70s. What do we know about aging and how that changes our sleep patterns?
Mm-hmm. So sleep is, despite what it feels like when we're younger, sleep is normally fragmented. Even my kids, who you'd think are the best sleepers in the world, if you take a close look at them, about every 90 minutes, they're waking up throughout the course of the night. You've been doing this your entire life. As you get older, however, we're just more aware of this. So I have a lot of patients who come in and say, you know, I go to bed at 11 and then I'm up at 12:30 and then I'm up at 2 and then I'm up at 3:30 and then I'm up at 5. And I'm like, well, how do you feel during the day? Well, it takes me, you know, a cup of coffee, but then I'm up and I'm going. Which I'm not saying that's what Steve is describing. Steve is describing something a little different, but that's not pathology. That's actually normal, especially as we get older, to have normal sleep fragmentation. Now, when it becomes a problem is those experiences that Steve described, when all of a sudden he's having, you know, quite a bit of more trouble falling back asleep. And this illustrates Steve's description of getting a sleep study, illustrates what we talked about earlier, which is that most people don't need a sleep study. Sleep studies are great for sleep apnea and a couple other conditions. But if this is a possible nutritional problem, maybe there's an endocrine issue going on, or the other thousands of different reasons why we mm-hmm. could be fatigued, a sleep study is not going to be helpful.
And sometimes medications can be disruptive to sleep, right? If someone's having sleep problems, it could be a side effect of that medication.
100%. Mm-hmm. Probably the medication that immediately comes to mind, and I have no idea if Steve is on this, but beta blockers notoriously, which are very commonly prescribed for heart conditions and for good reason, mm-hmm. Notoriously interfere with sleep as well as make us feel fatigued during the day.
And if it is a medication, can you shift it to taking it in the morning so that it doesn't disrupt your sleep at night?
Sometimes that works, and sometimes you just need to switch medications. Mm-hmm. And for individuals who are on beta blockers, actually one of the best things you can do is take a little bit of melatonin at night, because that beta blocker is inhibiting your natural release of melatonin at night.
All right, let's get to more of these phone calls. Dr. Howell in Minneapolis, Katie's on the phone. And Katie, what did you want to ask about sleep?
Yes, thank you very much. When my partner is falling asleep, his body often jerks a lot, sometimes rather violently with his legs and arms. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering what causes that. And he also speaks frequently during his dreams, and it could be a loud shout. And I also was curious about the causes of that and whether there are any things that could be done so that at least I can get a better night's sleep.
Oh, Katie. Oh, thank you for calling in. What does it sound like she's describing there? Someone whose arms and limbs are jerking around and he's calling out and dreaming. What does that sound like, doctor?
Thanks, Katie. Two things. You're describing two different phenomena. Number one, these little twitches that we get right as we fall asleep, they pretty much happen to everyone. If you put your hand on someone right as they're falling asleep, or even if somebody put their hand on you, Katie, right when you're falling asleep, I'll bet you could actually feel these little twitches. It just has to do with how the brain is disconnecting from the brainstem. You get these little, they're called myoclonic jerks. For some people, they're really dramatic, though. So that is just part of the natural falling asleep process. In terms of the sleep talking, what I'm and what's happening later in the night, what I'm wondering about is whether or not you may be describing dream enactment in your bed partner. And in particular, that whether or not an individual's when they're dreaming, you know, they're dreaming that a dog is, you know, maybe running after them, and so they kick against it, or they're thrashing or punching a little bit at night. That is an important condition to evaluate. That raises the possibility of something called REM sleep behavior disorder. It's very common. 1% of the population, but 5% of people older than 60. And it can lead to a sleep-related injury, both to the patient and bed partners, and it is very much a treatable condition.
Doctor, I'm curious, what advice do you give people who have partners who have sleep issues that they are not addressing, and so then the bed partner is suffering, they're not getting sleep either? Because I think that probably happens a lot, too. Like, one person is fine, but the person they're sharing the bed with is not.
Yeah, if you enjoy sleeping with your bed partner, then it is you are obligated to be a good sleep partner. So if you snore, get your snoring taken care of. If you jerk around a lot at night, figure out some way to address that, whether or not that's with, sometimes it's iron supplementation can take care of that, dealing with nutritional issues, maybe getting a bed where there's a little bit more the flexibility in terms of the movements. But, you know, we cherish the intimacy of sharing a bed with someone else. It's a wonderful part of life, but guess what? It also comes with an obligation.
If we don't get our sleep right, I mean, it can cause, you know, fractures in relationships. People start sleeping in different bedrooms when an option is to address the problem.
Absolutely. And sometimes partners just sleep in separate bedrooms, and that really works out well for them. And that's okay, too.
Let's take another phone call in Foley. Beverly's on the phone. We're talking about sleep and how to get better sleep and sleep problems. Beverly, what's going on at your home?
Well, I have always been a naturally night person.
All right now.
It never fails that I get this burst of energy about 10 p.m., but I don't want to do anything because I'm afraid that'll get me even more awake. I have a regular day job, mm-hmm. so I need to be up at a certain time, but I'm not even... My question is, can you change yourself from being a night person to a morning person? How do you do that if that's possible? And if you can't, how do you cope with it? Mm-hmm. Because I don't wake up refreshed because I'm not getting enough sleep. Right. When I finally do go to sleep, I sleep well. But it just, even if I go to bed early, it's still...
10 o'clock is your hour, 10 at night. Yes. Beverly, that's a great question. And we talked a little bit about this earlier in the hour, but, you know, can you change like your body's natural tendencies so that it works better with your job schedule?
Let's contemplate for a moment on where we came from as, you know, from our culture. Before we had, you know, the modern life of having to wake up early, we had a great diversity in terms of people's circadian rhythms. People like yourself, Angela, and Beverly would naturally be up later, and they would sleep in later. And that was really helpful for all of us as a community, as a tribe, to have some people who were up late and some people who were up early. And as a general rule, cultures work best when they respect the diversity of different individuals' circadian rhythms, because these circadian rhythms are difficult to move. We, you know, with the strategies we talked about before, bright light in the morning and melatonin in the evening, you can move, Beverly, you can move your circadian rhythm. But guess what? This is like your height and your eye color. You are going to drift back to this when given the opportunity. And that's just one of the things that makes you you. Unfortunately, it runs up against, you know, work and for other individuals, school, and family obligations and hosting radio programs, right, Angela?
Yes. In Mankato, let's talk to Jason. Jason's on the phone. Jason, what's your question about sleep?
Yep. I was wondering whether or not, your guest had any advice. I work overnights, three nights a week. So I work, at 10 p.m. to 8 a.m. three nights, and then I'm off for four, and that, as you can guess, wreaks havoc with my sleep schedule.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wreaks havoc. Working overnight. Lots of folks work overnight. What should they do, Dr. Howell?
I think overnight shift work is the glaring hole in terms of what we haven't solved yet. I do have some strategies for you. It kind of depends on how long you are working overnights, whether or not it's, you know, for three nights in a row or five nights in a row, how much time do you have until you get started? We're building a shift work program in the app I mentioned before, the SBI Sleep Journey app. And it also requires having an understanding of where your circadian rhythm is naturally to start. But 20 million Americans do rotating shift work. This has significant consequences in terms of their overall health, but we need people to work overnights, right, Angela? We need the ambulances and the ERs staffed, this has consequences, and we owe it to them as a society to do our best to nurture them and help them get good restful sleep as well.
But what's hard for him, he says he works overnight three nights a week, and then he's off for 4 days. So I'm sure he has to have a transition day. What can he do to manage that best, you think?
If possible, you want to try to hold on to that overnight shift as much as possible. Stay awake at night, go to bed in the morning, sleep in later. But this is much easier said than done. It is extremely socially isolating to work overnight shift work. Family members, kids want to know why mom and dad can't get up and play with them. Well, mom and dad need to sleep, and they will play with you, you know, once they wake up in their natural sleep time.
Dr. Howell, my last question, personal question.
Yeah.
I want to know your nighttime routine. Take me into your bedroom. Tell me your nighttime routine. You've decided not to drink today, and then what happens?
I usually at about 9 o'clock at night, I am very careful in terms of light exposure. I'm not dogmatic about it, but I'm dimming lights in the house where the lights can be dimmed. I will use my, guilty as charged, Angela, I will use my phone in the evening, but I will dim the screen down as much as possible. And I'll also, I have an iPhone, so I use the Night Shift, which is a blue light blocking software. Mm-hmm. I do personally take a small dose of melatonin, usually about 45 minutes before falling asleep. Half a milligram is usually all I take. And more importantly than that, I have a pretty consistent wake-up time, somewhere between 6 and 6:15, where I get bright light in the morning.
All right. Thank you. We covered a lot of ground. Thank you so much to our guest, our sleep expert, Dr. Michael Howell, Program Director of the Clinical Sleep Medicine Fellowship at Hennepin Healthcare and University of Minnesota, as well as the Medical Director of the Fairview Sleep Center in Edina. Thank you to all our listeners who called in and shared your stories and questions. Everyone, I hope you get a good night's rest tonight. This conversation was produced by our senior producer, Susan Davis. So I'll talk to you tomorrow at 9.
Support comes from Maplewood Toyota, with over 7,000 five-star reviews on Google and DealerRater.com. Maplewood Toyota is Minnesota's number one volume dealer per Toyota Motor Sales USA 2020. Visit MaplewoodToyota.com.
Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder, if you want to catch the show in real time, tune in and call in at a new time, 9 a.m. weekdays on NPR News.